You don't need to bring your coat down to the Baseball Heritage Museum because on Saturday, in honor of Black History Month, it's a nice presentation on Black baseball chronology. They'll cover a lot of ground, and the gentleman giving that presentation, kind enough to join us right now, Ike Brooks on the hotline. Ike, thank you so much for the time, my friend. How are you?
I'm very good. Very good, thank you. And you?
Oh, you know, it's raining out here, but that's all right. It could be worse this time of the year, right? I mean, it could be way, way worse on February 7th in Cleveland.
Yeah, well, we'll always remember it also. I was listening to your news account and the passing of Frank Robinson, so that means a lot to Clevelanders.
Yeah, no question about that. Just terrible news at 83 years old. I didn't realize he had been battling bone cancer for a while.
Right, yeah, I did not know that either.
And yeah, just terrible news. I mean, he was certainly iconic in this area, no doubt about that. And, you know, certainly he will be forever missed. I was reading a book. Jim Clark wrote it, the 1974 Cleveland Indians Rally Around Cleveland. And, you know, he talks about the exchange between Gaylord Perry and Frank Robinson that year after they had acquired Frank Robinson. And they kind of had a tiff there, but they worked things out like veterans always do. But, you know, Frank Robinson will be remembered for so many reasons, no doubt about that. Well,
yeah.
Saturday, you're giving the presentation on Black baseball chronology. Which kinds of aspects of the African-American players and other players of color will you be focusing on?
Well, first, to really look at Black baseball and to see it from several perspectives. At its core, Black baseball was a sport. Just as any sport is, you saw people do what they do best. And in looking at that, you say these were some very talented men and women in Black baseball, and many of the offensive innovations in Major League Baseball today were introduced by Black teams from the 1920s through the 1950s. As we dig deeper, baseball was a form of entertainment. It was an outlet for the Black working class, especially in a town like Cleveland, where you had many mill and factory workers. This was a way for them to spend not only time, but money. It was an opportunity to engage in leisure activities. We didn't have video games back then. And finally, Black baseball was a standalone industry. It launched a number of spinoff businesses that supported the games, and you're talking about printers, you're talking about cleaners, you're talking about hotels, restaurants, and by many accounts, Negro League Baseball was the third largest Black business in this country at the time.
Holy cow. Third largest at the time?
Yes.
Wow. But that's interesting to find out what kind of an economic impact it certainly had back then, because, you know, really, I don't think we hear much about that.
No, if you went along 55th Street between, I'd say, Lexington and Woodland, that was the Black downtown district. There were hotels there. There were restaurants. That was an outlet for people to spend some of the money that they were making at the numbers of factories that were in Cleveland. Remember, Cleveland in the 1930s and the 40s especially was a spawning ground for other industries to make their way. When you think of, there were dozens of companies that either had their corporate headquarters or major presence here in Cleveland. So you're talking about the production of steel, automotive parts, machine tools, hydraulic components, processing of oil and chemicals. This was a major city in the United States.
Yeah, no question about that. Again, that's fascinating, and I'm sure you'll detail all that on Saturday, talking about the economic impact it certainly had on the area. I know you'll chronicle the history of Black baseball in Cleveland from 1920 essentially through 1950, and as you look at those decades in particular, are there some moments that certainly stand out to you in those four decades?
Well, Cleveland had 11 teams to play here, Negro League baseball teams, but only one of them was a real competitive team. In 1942, what was then the Cincinnati Buckeyes moved to Cleveland, became the Cleveland Buckeyes, and they moved in 1943, stayed through 48, left for a year, and came back in 1950 when most of Black baseball went away. But during that 43 to 48 period, the Buckeyes team won the pennant twice and won the Negro League World Series in 1945. And what's prominent about that is they beat the Homestead Grays, who were the Negro League equivalent of the New York Yankees. And Cleveland beat them. And League Park, 66 in Lexington, was their home field during that period.
You mentioned 11 teams,
yes.
And that just sounds like an awful lot. You know, why so much turnover? I'm sure there's several factors in here, but, you know, why specifically so many teams?
It's scary. Some were not competitive. You started in 1922 with a team called the Tate Stars, and they were named after the owner. Then in 1924, there was a team called the Browns, 26, the Elites, 27, the Hornets, 28, the Tigers, 31, the Cubs. In fact, there's a guy named Satchel Paige who played on that team.
Oh, wow.
and that was before he left Cleveland to go to Pittsburgh and played for the Pittsburgh Crawfords. But then there's a team called the Stars that came in, the Giants, the Red Sox, the Bears. They weren't very competitive. The staying power, I really don't understand. Perhaps it was that non-competitive piece of it.
And what's interesting, too, about some of these teams and some of these leagues is that, you know, you had some unbelievably good players come through and play. You mentioned Satchel Paige, but, you know, I think certainly with these leagues, there were a lot of guys in there that got recognized and ended up going on to have successful major league careers. And I know you're going to detail all of that on Saturday, but that's not the only presentation that you have coming up. You've got another one coming up in a couple of weekends on February the 16th. Where you're giving a presentation on the East-West All-Star Games played in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. What were these games all about?
Well, the East-West All-Star Game is the same as the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. In fact, both started in 1933. The Negro League East-West All-Star Game many years outdrew the Major League Baseball All-Star Game.
Wow.
Yeah, and I know that is hard to believe, but this was an event. It was always held in Chicago at Comiskey Stadium, and it became the highlight of the African-American community nationwide. There are reports of folks who traveled from far and near to be at that game because it was quite a spectacle.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Again, Ike Brooks, he is giving a presentation on chronology of black baseball at the Baseball Heritage Museum this coming Saturday. Next Saturday, he's giving a presentation on the East-West All-Star Games. And I want to stick with that for just a moment here. You mentioned that it outdrew the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. A couple of questions come to mind. You know, number one, what was the draw? Was it something more cultural than it was topical at the time? And also, what kinds of figures are we talking about here? I mean, what kinds of attendance numbers are we discussing?
Well, let's first say, what was it? It was a cultural event, and it was a substitute for the World Series. The Negro Leagues could not come to agreement on who should represent who during their what had been called the World Series. So rather than continue to bicker, they decided to stage an all-star game where the East teams would play the West teams. The central place to do this, or a place large enough, or one inviting, was Chicago's Comiskey Stadium. People could get there by rail, they could get there by car. They would then have major African-American newspapers across the country select players for those games. And when those players were selected, they were proud to represent their teams and put on a spectacle for everyone.
So right. That's very interesting. So it's essentially the writers who were picking out the All-Stars?
Well, not the writers, but fans would call in. They'd use the newspapers to have fans select who they wanted to see on the field. Similar to, well, it's the same way we vote today for All-Stars, or we used to vote, where you'd call in as much as you could to let people know you wanted to see your favorite player on the field.
That's crazy. So Ike, my hearing, so this essentially took over for the World Series as a way to kind of determine the better league?
Well, yes, it was for bragging rights.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And this was not just black players, too, correct? There were some Latin players involved in this process as well, correct?
Yeah, it's interesting. People in this country were identified by either race or the color of their skin.
Wow. Okay.
Okay, so if you looked like a Negro, which was the term at the time, then you were considered one. So picture, for example, if we did the same thing today that we did then, many of the players that we look at on the Cleveland Indians roster and say, they're Latino, they would have been called Negroes.
So who were some of the players that played in these games? And you're talking about three different decades series here. There's some serious stars involved. Who were some of the players that played in these games?
Let's see. These names you may be familiar with. Let's see, with those who made it to the major leagues. Let's pull some of those. Ernie Banks.
Wow.
Cool Papa Bell. Roy Campanella, Oscar Charleston, Ray Dandridge, Leon Day, Larry Doby, Willie Foster, Josh Gibson, Buck Leonard, Biz Mackey, Jackie Robinson, Satchel Paige. Those sound familiar?
Oh,
now?
Yeah, just a
heard
little
bit.
Yeah, heard of a few of those
That's
guys.
Cool.
Wow, very interesting. So you look back and you think about some of those games and just how competitive they had to be, especially knowing the stage that they were playing on when it took the place of the World Series in certain circumstances. How competitive were these games?
Oh, let's talk about a couple standout players. There's a guy named Mule Suttles. Played for the Newark Eagles, and he played there prior to Larry Doby playing on that team. He was the most feared hitter in All-Star history. He slammed home runs in the 33 and 35 games. Okay? He was feared by pitchers that in the 35 game, he was walked four times.
Huh. Wow.
Okay, and his fifth at bat, he hit the game-winning home run in the 11th inning with two outs. Okay.
Why would you pitch to him then? That seems
well,
odd.
I'm guessing they were saying they're two outs. We're all tired. He's not going to do anything. Okay. Now he was a hitter. There's a pitcher, a guy named Leon Day. In fact, Leon Day is in the Hall of Fame today. He was the most productive pitcher in All-Star history. He's the all-time leader in strikeouts and innings pitched. And in the 1942 game, he faced seven batters, struck out five.
Wow.
No walks, no hits.
Wow. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Some incredible numbers there. No question about that. Well, Ike, certainly looking forward to both presentations again this Saturday at the Baseball Heritage Museum down at League Park. It's the Chronology of Black Baseball. And then the following Saturday, February 16th, it's the presentation on the East-West All-Star Games. Ike, we appreciate the time as always, my friend. Thank you so much for stopping by.
And thank you.
Absolutely. We look forward to checking these out this Saturday and next.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Ike. Again, Ike Brooks joining us here.